Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You are listening to the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show. How's it going? Keep it real. Take the red pill.
He's scheduled for 60 minutes next. He's going on French, British, Italian, Japanese television. People everywhere are starting to listen to him. It's embarrassing.
Here we are. Good evening. Welcome to Monday night. Okay, this is the Red Pill Hardcore Show with a little dash of butcher shop in it. And later on, you're going to be entertained by a little music by a group called the Cotton Picking Kids. I know you're going to enjoy. Hey, Ted, how's it going?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. I was a little down in the mouth earlier today. Just because I look at the way the world is turning, and I think, you know, I don't like the way the world is turning, and then I think, well, that's pretty stupid to concern yourself with something like that. You don't have any control over that. Just before I came in here and set up, I got a news update on the special master in the classified papers case that Trump is going through, and that classified master asked Trump's lawyers, who do these papers belong to? And Trump's lawyer said, "Well, we don't really know that right now. We're not prepared to answer that question. So it sort of looks like this thing's going to go back to Eileen Cannon, and she's going to have to deal with that issue. I feel better. I just feel better. I feel like the world has turned. This is that's the proper way for the wheels of justice to turn. And I was feeling pretty unhappy about the idea that one person in this country might be getting special treatment from courts that other people can't get. And of course, it's always been that way. I mean, my gosh, you know. The rich people have always gotten a better deal in court than poor people, but the idea that because a person has been president or is a governor or that they would get treated differently by the courts than you and me, that isn't the proper way to implement the rule of law. So I feel a little better. I feel like I'm still living in a country, still living in a democracy today. So I feel pretty good. How about you? How do you feel?
Well, I'm feeling great. You know, the little thing that I went through yesterday, with I mentioned the cotton picking kids, and that, and without naming people, like we're not going to do anymore here because we don't like to do that. But I actually, let's see if I can do it. I'm trying to switch over. I actually, Ted, you know that little thing I published in the butcher shop? That gentleman razzed me really good, and I took his very words and published an article. Remember that?
I do. I recall it.
Well, I got a response because Robert Beatty, now we're naming people that work with us here, folks. Robert Beatty is a writer for Forbes magazine. Robert Beatty came in from the mountains, and he's going to go back later tonight, but he checked through what was going on, and he put that article up so people could read it. And a guy, and I'm going to name this guy because he supported us. His name is Gordon Trez, okay? And you remember, Ted, how you said about sharecroppers, when the gentleman said that sharecroppers was a part of Jim Crow and it was hurting the people and all that kind of stuff? Well, here's what Gordon Trez actually said. You're going to like this. I had to stop listening when I got to the point how celebrating past cultures like sharecropping is wrong. That's not how right and wrong works. Right is any action that doesn't violate consent or physically hurt someone. I'm sorry so many people don't understand right and wrong. It is very sad. You know, which, thank you, Trez, if you're listening, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, he's been around before on the butcher show.
Yeah, that old Trez. That is. That's old Trez, man. Oh, man, it's great. That whole mess, we weren't going to delve too much into that, but then we are. And I'll explain it to the audience. I got into a discussion, and there's a bunch of kids, and a bunch. I'm going to explain their background. And, yeah. Cotton pickers, I'm giving you a big advertisement here on RBN if you're going to need a bunch of kids from the ages of 11 to 19, and they've got a band down in Coleman, Alabama, which you're going to hear Brand New Heartache tonight after one of our breaks. Them playing, you're going to be amazed. And the reason that they're named the Cotton Picking Kids is they were doing a show, I think it was Silver Dollar City or somewhere, and there's actually about 50 cotton picking kids. They all live on a kind of a compound up in Coleman. They're all family, and the five best ones are the ones that inhabit the band, and the rest of them, I mean, we got little four-year-old girls who can play the fiddle, you know, quite well and everything. They're delightful, and the reason they were named the Cotton Picking Kids was they were doing a show at Silver Dollar City, and they were everywhere because doing the show, they had free passes to all the rides and all the eating places there and everything. So naturally, they stand out, and then when time came for them to gather and do their part of the show, they couldn't find the whole band, and the producer got on the microphone and said, "Where are those cotton-picking kids at?" Like, you know, in exasperation. They actually didn't have a name for the band, but the mandolin player... All right, I got you. In fact, after I finish talking here, I want you to throw that on and let people hear these kids, but I'll tell you when. They didn't have a name for the band. And so they said, "Let's call ourselves the cotton-picking kids," you know? And, folks, I know we get listeners from the northern regions of the country and Europe and places like that. The word cotton picking means literally nothing these days. It doesn't have a racial implication. Keep your cotton picking fingers off my chicken. That's my piece of chicken. You know, you've lost your cotton picking mind. So it means nothing. And it certainly doesn't mean anything to an 11-year-old boy who plays a drobo guitar slung across his shoulder. He doesn't know anything about it. But we got some dissenters who said, well, number one, the cotton-picking kids are a bunch of racists, and they're trying to resurrect a bygone era where everybody's going to be a slave again, and all these horrible things are going to happen. this is the downside, in my opinion, of the woke millennial generation. They're digging for gold, and there's no gold there. And instead of taking this delightful, when you hear these kids play here in a minute, when Mike plays it, when you hear these, they're delightful. They're very, very good. The main lead singer, I think her name is Lucinda, she is a little 13-year-old Loretta Lynn. You'll hear a mandolin player on here, which is a 19-year-old older brother who drives the bus. He's a genius. When you hear the slide guitar, that's an 11-year-old boy. Banjo, the whole bunch of kids, the cotton-picking kids. Okay? Mike, give them a sample of it. Play that clip.
Like this video, make sure to give it a big thumbs up. And if you haven't subscribed yet, what's stopping you? Go ahead and click that red subscribe button down below. Click that notification bell to get notified every time we post a brand new video.
Thanks for watching. See you next time. Bye!
And it kills me every time. I couldn't count up all the floors I've walked or all the times I lose my mind.
I'm working on a brand new heartache, and it kills me every time.
I couldn't count up all the floors I've walked through all the times I lose my mind.
I'm working on a brand new heartache, and it kills me every time.
Okay, and if you think there's something wrong with those kids, and you think they're resurrecting racism or anything, well, you're just a dead blame communist, okay? Ted, what do you think?
Well,
I really do have some things to say about this. One of them is that as I was listening to that, my toe was tapping, and it conjured up memories for me of the Louisiana Hayride.
Oh yeah,
and the Grand Ole Opry. With Minnie Pearl up there in her hat with the price tag hanging off the brim, and people, I think we have a problem in our country that is just now really coming into focus for me, and it surprises me that that's the case because I've been studying it for a long time. And maybe it's that I've been listening, reading what other people have to write and not thinking, you know, clearly enough about it myself. But what our audience just heard was an honest to God artifact of American life. That right there is a true representation of the way music was for a long, long time. And I want to talk a little bit about the culture that it springs from. That's music of immigrants right there. That's the kind of music that the immigrants of our grandparents' generation and great grandparents' generation brought with them. And what you heard is what emerged out of that music. Their culture, and I've been in Appalachia. I hiked Appalachia as a teenager, and I've been to get-togethers where people would, you know, people build houses on the side of the hill up there, and so you know, a person could have a big front porch, and that front porch would let out onto a yard that just sloped downward. And people would gather in that yard, and there'd be musicians on that porch, and there'd be clog dancers. Now, you know, not everybody knows what clog dancers are, but if you've ever seen it, you won't forget it. That comes from Scotland and Ireland, as I was listening to it, it took me back to when you and I were, you know, trying to make some cogent projections on the 2016 election. The time leading up to it, it looked like Hillary was a shoo-in, and so we had that incident where I did that thing that we're not going to talk about, but it sort of involved making an illegal entry into a motorhome that had the Southern plan for the Trump campaign in it, and so I grabbed some papers and took pictures of more and came out of it, and on that trip that I made, I learned something, and that is if you drive down I-10, when you cross the Texas-Louisiana line, you cross over into a different world. It's really, I mean, you can feel it. You've got to really have your head, you know, somewhere other than where you are to not get a sense of being on not a different planet, but definitely in a different world. Almost like you entered a time machine and you've gone backward in time. And I took the time on that trip. I went down I-10 to Biloxi, Mississippi, and I got to Biloxi, Mississippi. I hung a left and went up to Birmingham, Alabama, and I hung a right and went down through Georgia. And traveled through rural Alabama and Georgia, and I would stop at the cemeteries because I began to notice that in these cemeteries, I thought, gosh, there's a lot of flowers in these cemeteries. You know, I guess people don't think about it much, and I guess people don't look at cemeteries very much, but when you look at the average cemetery west of the Mississippi, you see flowers, but they're not, they don't look like a florist shop. It doesn't look like the Queen's funeral, you know, but you go into those graveyards on any given day, they have tombstones that go all the way back to the Civil War and beyond, and they have fresh flowers on them. Lots of fresh flowers on them.
As a matter of fact, that's something I totally forgot when I was taking this onslaught. Where I live up here in Tennessee now, I'm right in the middle of the Fort Donelson battlefield. And what happened there was in 1861, Lincoln told General Grant, who would later be the one that led the entire Union Army, but he was a regular general then, and Lincoln sent him down here because he had to make the Cumberland River safe for them to use to work their way down to Memphis. You know, they had to secure Memphis and that area down there in order to move their way across the South during the war. And I didn't even know it when we came up here. They had a hell of a battle up here. I mean, they had the Fort Donelson, and Grant came down. He burnt that thing down. They moved about 2 miles down the road, and he followed them down there, and he burnt that thing down. And this is the way it went, all the way down the trail. And now even today, there's Dover. There's Big Dover, Little Dover. The Big Dover is one part of town, and there's a big old space between it and Little Dover, and there's some more stores down there. Well, that big old space is where Grant burned up the thing up, and it never has quite come back. And that's where the graveyards are, one graveyard after another. And just like Ted said, flowers are celebrating the battle, celebrating the 4th of July, you know, anything that people go around there like their relatives, and some of them are ancestors and relatives, you know, going out there, you know, remembering the ones that came before us and everything. And Grant even, well, I heard some locals here, when Grant finally beat them, and they said, okay, we give up, we ain't gonna fight no more, he said, okay, I'm pulling up, and I'm going down toward Memphis. I want 10,000 cigars when I leave, and if you don't give them to me, I'm gonna burn the rest of your town down and light a cigar on your church as it goes down. You know, I mean, it was bad times, and it was the Civil War, and it was, but it's like Ken said, there's people putting flowers on those graves to this day, and it's very real history. And these cotton-picking kids, or these kids, they're going to name after their family name. By the way, these are Italian immigrants' kids. There are people came over from Italy about one, maybe two generations ago up in the Appalachians. Okay, so they're immigrants, and they smack of that era. They smack of Americanism. People that really worked hard to make things work. And that's what got me. I don't normally get into arguments or discussions. I call people that read us at a butcher shop, I call them civilians, and I don't normally get involved. But when this gentleman took off after those kids, I thought, no, I'm not going to let this go. I'm just not going to let it go. I'm going to go ahead and teach him a lesson. He's got to learn, you know, and everything. And then Ted supported me on it. But it's a big thing about Americana here. And for people who are listening, those of you in New York, we have people in New York listening. We have people in California, England, all that kind of stuff. And you got to understand that we're all humans. And I don't believe in the woke generation movement, because this is what makes wokeism wrong. Wokeism wrong is I'm so woke I can't see the forest for the trees. You know, you can't listen to those kids playing and come out with something positive. And the fiddles in the end. I'm a songwriter by trade, and I've recorded a lot of songs in Nashville. Those fiddles that you heard, the twin fiddles. That is a 15-year-old girl and a 13-year-old girl, from what I understand. If you look up the Cotton Picking Kids on YouTube, you'll see them and realize these are a bunch of little kids. You know, they just playing because they like it. Go ahead, Ted. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
What you're saying is feeding right into my narrative. Although I want to instead of disagreeing with you, I think I'll ask you a question instead. And that is
okay. Go ahead. I'm gonna sit outside a minute because I want to hear the crickets. Sure, go ahead.
Okay. without a doubt, we've always known that slavery was wrong. There's never been a time when one person was forced to work and essentially give over the fate of their entire life to another person for no return whatsoever. There's never been a time that it wasn't known that something wrong was going on, but it was so profitable that people did it anyway. Before the Revolutionary War, there was a guy named Daniel Boone, and Daniel Boone broke the British law, and he went into the Kentucky Territory, and he erected a town called Boonesville, and the Indians that lived there took exception to that and did their very level best to get rid of them, but they couldn't get rid of them. So finally, they hooked up with it was the Shawnee. They hooked up with the British, and the British said, "Look, we'll give you weapons, and you go attack the fort, and you've got the numbers. You'll be able to bring them down." So they did, and they almost did, and they almost did bring it down. But Daniel Boone had sent for reinforcements in the militia. Now, the militia, to be perfectly clear, was nothing but a bunch of armed men that we relied on to keep keep the peace, but mainly to hunt runaway slaves. That was their job. And they were a bunch of mean sons of guns. I mean, they were mean. You think Ron DeSantis is mean. These were some mean son of a gun. And it took them about 5 weeks to get there, but they got there just in time to save Daniel Boone. Now, what was Daniel Boone doing in Kentucky? Why was he there? He was there for the purposes of making money. He wanted to get deer hides, and deer hides had a value. And actually, the value of our currency for a while was based on deer hides. That's where the word buck comes from. A buck's hide was worth a dollar, you know, and so for a while, our currency was based on deer hides, but it didn't take very long for it to become based on cotton, and cotton became the currency of the world the same way that oil is today. The markets rose and fell, and the value of currencies rose and fell based on the price of cotton, and the South used slaves. Oh, we're getting a commercial. So I'll explain the rest of it when we get back from our commercial.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
What y'all riffing about? Hang them like they did in the South. Dead with your in your mouth. Now what this is about? Was they can sleep like I won't slip in your house.
Come on,
and put my in your till you get home. I lamp like I'm part of your couch. Dad, sit on me. That's when I'ma squeeze 50 pretty swiftly. Till them coppers come and get me. Trying to tell this coward is real, acting like I can't get through that Sloman shit. I'm a veteran, I take levers and firms, safe cracker, move from New York to Jersey, still send kites with birds, nothing's heard, feds wanna tap my words, take vehicles off curves, tools off her, jewels off all you nerds, you swerve, I splurge with all y'all riches, coming to junk, blind all y'all bitches, give respect, cause respect is due, keep frontin', and I'ma put the tech to you, coward.
Dame espacio. Dame espacio. Dame espacio.
And here we're back again. We're back again with Brother Theo. Ted, please continue. Go ahead.
Well, I want to proceed to the having established the fact that you have a section of the country. A large section of the country, and I might add the original section of the country, who had established the value of worldwide currency based on what they were producing, tobacco and cotton. I want to ask you a question now about wokeism, all right? Wokeism is something that I dare say in terms of as it filters down to the, you know, to the common man, originated on the West Coast. It comes from the newest part of the country, and I would say that wokeism can basically be defined as a cultural as a means of attacking the culture that exists and replacing it with history that none of us really knew. None of us knew growing up. They didn't teach us in school about the Tulsa riots or the riots of the 1920s. They there was so much that they did not teach us when we were growing up. I guess you can attribute some of that to the fact that they had a limited amount of time in which to teach their curriculum. But I think it's also true that it was their job to teach us that being an American was a great thing. I mean, my God, we all started the day with the Pledge of Allegiance, and every day. So you and I have said the Pledge of Allegiance at least 8,000 times in our lifetime, because that was how it went. And when you went to the football games, you held your hand over your heart and sang along with the Star Spangled Banner, or at least you stood there with your hand over your heart, your hat off. So culturally in the South, there is a powerful structure that has been there for a long time, and it is not really going anywhere. And wokeism is something that started in the West, and it made progress, fairly rapid progress, I'd say, due to the fact that it was basically a democratic idea, and democratic governance leads to greater prosperity for the common man, and more freedoms, I would say, for the common man. But it attacks conservative culture. And I hate to use the word conservative culture, because it's this the culture in the South and the Deep South and the area that we're and the Appalachians is it conservative culture? Yeah, in the sense that it hasn't changed and is resistant, highly resistant to change. Yes, it's conservative, but there are other applications for that term, conservative culture. So my question for you is it possible for wokeism and that culture of the South that refuses to call the Civil War and calls it the War of Northern Aggression to coexist in the same country?
All right, in answer to you, with reasonable people, yes. With what was that word you gave me? And I whipped on that old boy,
presentism.
Presentism, yes. And he, by the way, he said I made that word up. You know, I said, no, I didn't. No, you gave it to me. And what that is where you judge someone, modern person, by saying they're just like a generation or two ago. You know, and you're trying to bring those beliefs up and pin on them, and that goes with calling someone a racist. You know, well, they don't have any other argument. Well, you must be a racist. You must be a racist. Now, this is for people like the gentleman that aspersed the cotton picking kids because it had the word cotton picking in it, and the only cotton he's ever picked was out of his closet. Okay, so you know. So, I mean, there you go. I couldn't imagine owning another person. I wouldn't know how to do it. I honestly wouldn't know how to own another person. You know, if I had somebody that I had a title to, and eventually he'd be an employee. Because I wouldn't know. I wouldn't want to own another person. Well, maybe Beyonce. But any other than that, you know, no.
For out of revenge.
I used to want to own Janet Jackson. You know, but anyway. but you know, what I'm saying is I'm a 20th century person, and such a thing. And what he was talking about too, he said about the sharecroppers. And Ted, you explained to me today when we were on the phone. You explained to me what I was, and I'm very rarely caught short for words or descriptions. But I was reaching for something, and Ted, he nailed it on it. He said, "I said, what he's doing is, I told this guy, I said, you're saying sharecroppers like they're the enemy." You know, some sharecroppers. Oh my God. Okay. In other words, these guys that can never own land, didn't have enough money to own land, and they work a deal with the guy that formerly owned the big plantation before the war and everything, and they have some land that they can grow stuff on, and they work a deal where they can give a part of their crops to them, and they keep some of it and all that. Now, there was the company store, which I learned about, where they would have a credit account at the store that they could run all year. And under, like in Louisiana, if you owed money to the company store and you tried to leave, that was actually a crime. You were stealing. And my dad, back in 1930-something, actually helped a black man named Charlie C. get out of Louisiana into Texas to escape a company store situation and let his family live free, okay? But for this guy to say, well, the sharecroppers were bad and this was bad and you're wanting to resurrect the old days and so you must be a racist. No, I'm not. I'm just exactly what Ted just said. And these people, these kids, for instance, know nothing about these things. Nothing about these things. All they're doing is playing music, trying to get on the Grand Ole Opry. Kyler, of all people, is trying to help them with that. And he's actually attacking these little girls out of some wokeism vision that he has out of California, trying to impose on them a persona that simply doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. And if this country's ever going to come back together again, and we're not together right now, but if it's ever going to come back together again, we are going to have to accept each other for what we are, and we're not bad people. I guarantee you, Ellen, you know, our hero, I think it's September the 19th, 2022. I hope it's September 19th. But anyway, don't ever say that to your psychiatrist. Anyway, September 18th or 19th, everything. This is a live show, folks. Be sure to call in. We'd love to talk to you. But anyway, we're different people, and we're a divided people. We're a divided people. When the towers fell, we weren't divided. When the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, we weren't divided. Okay, not like we are now. It's the very idea that something like wokeism could be a national trend. And saying somebody is woke. This guy even attacked my vernacular. Now, I use Texas vernacular when I write, and quite a bit when I do a show like this, okay? But I'd like to remind, say somebody is woke, it's hillbilly talk. You are awakened, not woke. Okay? And I hear this all the time. Where they bastardize the language. Educated people, you know? But we've got to get back together. And I don't know how we're going to do it, but we've got to do it. We either have to get back together, or we're all going to have to learn Chinese, because they're not screwing around. They are open for business, and they're doing everything they can to make sure that they own most of this country. Back to you, Ted.
Well, I was just sitting here thinking about...
512-248-5282. Yeah, I think 5282. That's the number. Go ahead, Ted.
I was just sitting here thinking about...
8252. 8252. Go ahead, Ted. Mike's hitting me. Go ahead.
I was just sitting here thinking about... when I was in high school, I had been a track runner, and I tried out the year before, so I tried out for the football team, and had pretty good prospects as a wide receiver. And so one day I was on the field, and we were practicing, and I went out and ran a pattern, and it was a fairly long pass. I caught the ball, and I was headed for the goalpost, and I mean, I didn't have anything in my way. There wasn't anybody in my way. And I really turned on the gas. I was moving toward those goalposts. And there hadn't been anybody close to me when I caught the ball. And suddenly, I felt something moving behind me. And then a freight train hit me from behind. And it was this big black kid, and whose name was Rocket Beaven. And so Rocket and I became very good friends. And he got me a job, in fact. I didn't have a car. My dad wasn't about to buy me one. We lived 11 miles out from Tallahassee. I mean, from my school. So every day I'd run to school, which was 11 miles, and then I'd run back after school. Every now and again, I'd be able to catch the bus back or get a ride, you know. But most of the time, I was running to and from school, and I badly wanted a car. And my dad said the only way you're going to get that is if you get it yourself. And I looked at the price of cars, and I realized, I mean, there wasn't much money back then. And I realized I wasn't going to be able to make very much money. In fact, I didn't really even know how to get a job. And although I'd been mowing yards before that, out 11 miles from Tallahassee, we were living on an old plantation. And so Rocket lived out there in that same general area. And he got me a job working on a plantation, and I would work after school and on weekends at this plantation to make money. And Rocket's plan, he had an uncle who was a mechanic, and Rocket's plan was that I would accumulate enough money and buy a car that was in the junkyard but was fixable, and he had his uncle out looking for one. And that I'd fix that car up and until it was drivable, and then I'd have a car. And that sounds like a heck of an idea. But, you know, it took me a while to get used to working on that plantation. And one of the things, it was all agricultural, all of it. So, you know, I worked in hay, I worked in corn, I worked with watermelons. And I work picking cotton. I have picked cotton for a living. And I went to go see his family for the first time. They lived on that plantation. And his great-grandmother lived there in this. They all lived in this slave shack that their family had been living in for like 150 years. And so the same family had been living in this slave shack for like 150 years. And the great-grandmother was still alive. She was blind, but she did everything for herself. And the grandmother lived there, and the mom lived there. Dad didn't live there. Dad was dead or gone. I don't really recall. And his sister lived there. And so it was a house full of females and Rocket. And I got to where I would spend quite a bit of time over there, and I asked them at one point, "How come your family has lived in this house for 150 years?" And I asked Rocket one time, "Why why do you work on a plantation? Why are you, you know, and Rocket did everything on that plantation, man. He worked on the tractors. He worked on the farm equipment. He worked beside me in the field. And he told me, he said, it's about survival. It's about being able to eat. He said, I wouldn't be here if my folks hadn't been living in this slave shack and working on this plantation, because there were years when there wasn't anything. There wasn't any money. During the Depression, there wasn't any money. You know, there were hard times. And so it's about eating. It's about being able to eat. And he said, so when we sit down at the table and we eat, you know, and we say that blessing, we mean it. We are offering up thanks for our very lives. And that's the first time I'd ever had it expressed to me like that. And I asked other people that lived in poverty, and that was their response. Their response was, it's about survival. So this guy that, you know, that you were corresponding with, and was basically trying to pull the same thing that the Republicans are trying to pull by casting history into the wastebasket with this so-called CRT theory, you know, it's the same thing. It's the exact same thing, only in reverse. You know, they think that we ought to take all this history and all these memories that these people have and put them in dusty old books, you know, scholarly articles, and that is a recipe for losing that, for losing it for good. And I think that the Southerners and the people in the Appalachians, the people that are the descendants of the people that built this country, are live in fear of having their history eradicated. And having their way of life eradicated, because they live much the same way that their ancestors lived, and so I don't think that this guy is going to be able to go hold up his hand like Moses and part the Red Sea and turn this tide of culture back. I just don't see that happening, and I also don't see the people on the West Coast declining to continue moving forward with culture and saying, no, we're going to define ourselves by more modern values. In a way, I think that they think they're doing this by getting rid of the Confederate flag and other reminders of the bad old days, you know, the hard times. The people in the South are clinging to the hard times. They're clinging to those memories of the hard times, because that's what empowers them and to teach their children how to live, you know, yet another generation, take another generation forward. But the people in the West, they see things differently, and they want to somehow or another figure out a way to make the other people go away. And I think the people in the South want to figure out a way to make the people in the West go away. And considering the fact that we've got to share a federal government, I really wonder how in the world we're going to make it happen. We're facing a lot of adversity, and that's a hell of a challenge, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. You know, the different cultures around the country now, the Far West culture, the California culture, I've got that problem in my own family. I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. I grew up in Central Texas. My two sons were born in Central Texas, but my one son went out and joined the Navy, and he ended up in California, San Diego, and got married to a girl out there. And we don't get along at all. she consistently finds something wrong with me, and it's all exactly what you're talking about. The famous picture over the rail was what broke it for me, and we no longer talk. We no longer talk because it's just useless to even talk to her. They're so into what she calls creepy. About a year ago, I was sitting on the porch. We have an extensive porch here at the house. In fact, what I'm trying to get the Cotton Picking Kids to do a concert here and have the audience is boats on Lake Barkley, people in boats listening to the concert, okay? So you can imagine how broad the porch is and how long it is. It's roughly the size, a little larger than the stage on the old Grand Ole Opry. And I'm way down at one end of the porch, eating breakfast, and my granddaughter Puck is way down at the other end, and I looked up and I caught her. She was in her long nightgown all the way down to her ankles, getting up that morning. Her brothers were swimming in the lake, and she was leaning over with the sun coming up, looking at the lake. So with the lake as a backdrop, I thought, there's a picture. Well, there's a, and I took a picture of her for her stuff on the TLB network, okay? I put it up, and when I did, I immediately got a note from my daughter-in-law. Don't put up pictures of her like that. It's so creepy. It's so creepy. Everything you do is creepy over there for them. If they talk about race relations, you're creepy. Make a joke, you're creepy. Everything is got to be judged by the standard of the West Coast. And gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, if we could take a buzzsaw and just saw California off, where we just kind of, you know, right about where the San Andreas Fault is, and let it just drift out, I think the country might be a lot better off. You know, it really might be a lot better off. Because those people go ahead.
Well, I think you just illustrated my point. You're answering California off.
Go ahead.
And what I don't understand is why can't we have a country where when you're in one part of it, you know, you eat at Waffle House and go to the Grand Ole Opry, and when you're another part of it, you eat at Pollo Loco and go to Burning Man. I mean, yeah, but why can't that be?
I get into it when we go to different places. I get into the culture of wherever I'm at, even California. When I go out there, I enjoy it. I go to Knott's Berry Farm, and
boy, that's a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Did you like the house the Gravity House?
I was drunk. We got a commercial coming up, Ted. We got a commercial coming up, man.
Okay. All right.
Agents, federal forces, and domestic terrorist militias. This is your emergency broadcast system. This is a national alert. Imminent threat is nationwide. You must stay in sight of your homes or risk being shot on sight. The conspiracy is upon you. Your conspiracy friends were right all along. Now you must learn to survive. If you hear this, you are the resistance. This is your emergency broadcast system. The conspiracy is upon you. Your conspiracy friends were right all along. Now you must learn to survive. If you hear this, you are the resistance.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.